This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow, and getting to that time of year when we reflect on the year gone by. So we thought we'd check in with the Facebook live show Intelligently Ratchet. It's a web series that breaks down the news of the day from perspectives in black communities. Intelligently Ratchet is hosted by Kevin Causey-Thomas and Kareem Bishop Omega Jarrett. In their third season now, you can tune in every Wednesday night at 9 o'clock on Facebook. And they're here with the biggest stories of 2018. We're also streaming live right now on our Facebook page and on their Facebook page. So it's the Intelligently Ratchet Facebook page or State of Things. Welcome back. Good to have you guys back.
Hey, thanks for having us, Frank.
All right, let's take a look at 2017. What have you been talking about? Second Amendment, deeply on your mind.
Yeah, we've been talking, you know, with a lot of the cases that have popped up in the headlines here recently about the question around the Second Amendment. And do African Americans have the same rights covered under the Second Amendment as other Americans, as white Americans, as you know? And the recent cases that bring this to our attention, E.J. Bradford, if y'all are familiar, it's a young man that was shot and killed in Alabama in the mall this past Black Friday after Thanksgiving. A young man that was United States Army home for Thanksgiving. A shooting occurs at the mall. People run in all directions, right. And the cops show up, shoot this man in the back three times.
And then tried to cover it up.
And the initial statement was that he had a gun, right? That he had a weapon that was brandished, and that was the cause for the alarm why he shot, right?
Right.
We saw that case. Then we turn around and see another case in Chicago, a young man, Jamel Robertson, no criminal record, security guard.
Working security. That's the thing about it. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
The man was working security.
Right.
Which means I have a badge on. If I'm an armed security guard, everything says, hey, I'm a security guard.
Including the shirt, the black shirt that says security in big white letters on his front and his back.
Right.
A shooter comes into the club, begins to start shooting. This man subdues him, gets him down. The cops show up. People tell him, this is the person that saved us.
Right.
Cops shoot him dead.
Yep.
And so, you know, he had a gun. It's become the... Yeah. You know, the cause, or, you know, without, you know, making any type of assessment of a situation, it's to show up and I see a black man with a gun, I'm shooting and I'll figure it out after.
That's always been the assessment, though. Yeah. Like, if you look at it across the board, even before we go with social media and everything like that, we could go back to the 80s. It's always been, oh, he had a gun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was reaching. I'm shooting you 71 times and reloading because you're reaching for your wallet. Oh, you had a gun.
Right.
You know, we forget about those stories that were so prevalent back in the early 2000s and everything like that. It's just that now people are waking up to the fact. But this has been something in the black
community. Well, and how easy it is to believe, too. And I think this is the thing, because I remember the Thanksgiving shooting, and I was just looking at headlines, right, because we're all on vacation.
Sure.
So we're pulling up headlines, and I'm just scanning to make sure nothing big is happening. I see that headline. I read a paragraph about this hero, the cop who killed him.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And they say the hero who, you know, saved, we could have, good thing he was there with a gun. That hero saved. And that's, you know, you sort of believe that.
Right.
With a gun, he saved him. Same thing, the converse in the club shooting, right, mm-hmm. with Roberson, the hero's the guy who actually stopped the shooter and pinned him to the ground, by the way, without killing him.
Right.
Right. He gets him pinned and stopped without killing him, and he's the hero, but that's not the story. The story is the cops come in and kill him, and we never hear about the hero until much later.
Sure. And it makes me want to ask the NRA crowd, the good guy with a gun crowd. That's been a lot of what I've heard in rhetoric about guns in our society. A good guy with a gun. Well, if that teacher had a gun, if that pastor had a gun, if somebody on that plane had a gun, well, here's two people that had guns.
Right.
Here's two people that were doing their job. I don't know anything else you can do other than serve your country in the armed forces or work security at a club, in the sense where you're saying that my regard is safety or serving my country, and you still show up and then you're murdered. And I put that, and I always ask the NRA crowd how they feel about that argument. And then I also put that in contrast with mass shooters that always seem to make it home alive.
Yeah.
We always seem to take mass shooters alive. Like, a guy will walk into Burger King and kill 20 people and he comes out alive.
Right.
The guy goes into church, shoots 8 people, he's alive.
Right.
The guy that shot up the Batman movie is alive. These guys are dead over nothing, you know? And I just really, this year has seen, you know, social media has just brought that to my attention.
Talk about more about the conversations you're hearing. I mean, clearly this is what you're thinking. And I have to say that in the with the security guy that we're talking about, he's a security, he's working security at a club.
Right.
I think from some of the accounts I've read, it's not particularly clear he had any kind of uniform, although I think his hat may have said security.
Okay.
And everybody was telling the cops on the way in, he's the security guy, you
sure.
know, and the guy on the ground. So they were telling the cops this. I'm not sure what he was wearing. I just want to clarify that.
Okay.
But I want to hear more about the conversations that you're reading, that you're catching over social media. I mean, you talked about the fact, Bishop Omega, the idea that this has been going on for a long time. And in communities of color, this is nothing new. Is it eye rolling that's going on? Like, here we go again? Or is there more? What kind of conversations
are
you hearing?
Well, as far as in the community itself, it's I think I speak for us. It's more of the same. It's like now, thank God it's a little bit of light being casted on this. It's a little bit more transparency. Mm-hmm. And because again, when you're coming from a place where there wasn't social media and these same things were happening, you're witnessing these things. You know, I grew up in a neighborhood where I've witnessed police brutality as close as I am with you. But, and now that same police brutality is going on, like, I've already seen that, but I'm glad the fact that, hey, now we're not just saying, okay, the guys that did it, you know, hey, no, if it doesn't sound good, at least we're having those conversations. Like, this doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the conversation rolls.
And just to kind of add on to that, in this social media area, I watched Philando Castile die on Facebook Live. His wife was in the backseat with the child, Facebook Live broadcasting what was going on with them in real time. And we were able to look at that until Facebook took it down. You're seeing most of what's happening on a daily basis in your social media. It's in Facebook, it's on WorldStar, it's on YouTube. And I wonder what type of PTSD at some point kicks in, right? Because the other side of it, when you talk about conversations, it's the conversations we have to start having with our kids so early, right? It's the conversation about, okay, now, because in general, back in the day, your mother said, go to school, stay out of trouble, don't start fights, you know, don't do drugs, don't do certain things. This is straight and narrow path and you'll be fine. I don't know that that's true anymore.
Nope.
I don't know that that's true anymore. I see a young man, like, because what I always see in the after part of it is when a young man is murdered, then they have to exonerate themselves from beyond the grave.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we shot him. He killed him. Let's go see if there's some weed at the crib.
Yep.
Let's dig up anything in the past. Nice. Let's find the worst picture of him with a do-rag and his braids undone that I can find where he maybe looks high. And it's this whole thing.
Right.
And so it's the conversation I think a lot of us, me and Bishop have kids, a lot of, I'm sure your viewership, that we're having with our kids now to figure out how we can tell them to be safe. And I don't know what to tell them anymore.
Well, I mean, part of the message in this, just these last two examples, is if there's trouble, get out. Don't try to help.
That's
what I'd have to tell my son. Mm-hmm. Don't try to help. If you can't help, I get it. Get out of there because they're going to blast you.
Okay, right. Frank. But now you're in your apartment eating cereal in your living room and there's a knock on the door.
Yeah.
It's police. Mm-hmm. And they shoot you in your living room.
Right.
And you in your underwear. It's just kind of where we're at now. It's like, I can't tell you what to do to get out of the way of these guns anymore.
That's Botham Jean. That happened.
That's
a true story.
But what I'm going to say is this with that one is I kind of take that one away from this is almost a woman scorn and I have a gun, you know, and it's just like, yo, I'm just going to go ahead because I don't know, did we find out if they were still dating or anything like that? So that goes into another part of it, but that goes into where it says people are abusing their authority. You know, police are authority figures and people, they say we have to respect the police. But I think what we need to start doing is saying, hey, police, no, you need to start respecting the public. Like you are in service to us.
But
at the end of the day, though, you're supposed to get bad guys off the street, and that's fine. But you don't treat, until you know the person is a bad person, you don't treat that person as such. You are in the service. If I'm taxpaying, you're not going to talk to me outside of just because you have a gun. You can't talk. You're not going to do that, you know. And that's where a lot of this stuff comes into play.
And accountability.
Accountability.
Who holds the police accountable when these things happen?
Let's talk about this, though.
Okay.
They will say it's dangerous work. It's always been dangerous work, and it's getting even worse. And you can say, in part, because states like North Carolina and other states are putting less and less money into mental health services.
Mm-hmm.
There's more people on the street who have lots of problems that the police are not equipped to help, you know. And if they've got a gun, that becomes a solution, right? I mean, if all you got is a hammer, then every problem is the nail. And so to some extent, you are these police forces and police officers up against it because they're being asked to handle more than they can possibly handle. It goes way beyond their training.
Well, sure. I've said this. Well, we had Chief Blue, Chapel Hill Police Chief, on a couple weeks ago on Challenging the Ratchet. My suggestion was this. Because since the police force is being more militarized, let's do like we do in the military. You go through your tour, or you go through, say you go through something, you know, Frank, you go out, you're the police officer, you're a rookie, you went through a murder or something like that, it's your first time, you're a little shooken up. Let's give you 3 weeks. Mental health, you know, let's give you a break. Let's give you a cycle. So 6 months you're on. Then you take 2 weeks off. 6 months you're on. You take 2 weeks. So that way
maybe
you decompress.
See a psychiatrist in that time.
Yeah, within that time. So that way you can decompress. And because I'm not saying that their job is not hard.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But it's like you see it day in and day out. You know, that's what I'm thinking. So I think that's what we have to do is better training and allow these guys to have a decompression period.
Another big story, viral videos, white people calling the police on black folks doing their being alive. Like now being alive while black.
Yes,
right,
sir.
Right.
And I just want to say, because with all these stories, I want y'all to know we promoting optimism, Frank.
We do.
This ain't nothing that we like swing, lose, speech. Like we ain't woe is me
all
about
right.
it.
No,
you know?
We're not.
But it's just this year, 2018, you're seeing phenomenons, and this has been one of them, calling the cops on black people for doing absolutely nothing. Eating, I saw a young lady that was eating lunch in her dorm break area.
Right.
I saw some people barbecuing. Barbecue Becky was probably the most famous, you know, that called the cops on these people for barbecuing out at the park. I saw a little girl selling water and lemonade that a lady called the cops on.
Right.
A young man
she asked if he had a permit.
Yeah, right. And in the two cases in North Carolina specifically, a young man, let me say this one first. A young man was trying to get into his apartment. A couple was going into their apartment complex, and a young white lady stopped him in the apartment and asked them could they afford to live there. I know that one was a big deal. That one went viral. And then the other one that really touched me was a guy, you've seen a lot of people trying to run people out of their pools.
Right.
And these apartment complexes prove that you stay here. How do I know that you live here? Other tenants challenging people entering their own building on how do I know that you live here? And especially about the pool thing, it touches me because that just dates way back for me about African Americans being allowed to use the pool and things like that. And
as a person that's snuck in a lot of pools, I want to say I do not appreciate you asking me whether or not I should be in this pool or not, because no, I shouldn't be in this pool. I don't live here. I promise you. I've snuck in plenty of pools.
Okay. That's cool, but I think what happens—
It wasn't because I was African-American.
Right,
it's
right.
because I didn't have
right.
a pool in my complex.
But here's my thing about it, right, is that, first of all, people choosing to use the cops as a way to get rid of something that is just displeasing to me. I don't think you should be here.
Right.
Come remove this person from my presence. They don't belong here.
Right.
That's one thing. And then the other thing of it is— when cops show up, guns show up,
yep.
and then guns go off, right? And so you're putting me in this space where a gun could go off, and that's what we know happens when cops show up sometimes, whether we want it to or not.
You had an experience like this that's pretty interesting and fairly telling about get out the way when we call the cops.
Yeah, and this spoke to me a lot about the awareness of everyone, white, black, all people of color. I mean, you know, just about everybody about this reality and this truth. Where I work, we had a disturbance, an incident go on with somebody in our building, and my manager and my boss chose to call the police. It was, somebody was being unruly in there, and they knew that the cops were on the way. So my manager and a couple people on the staff were like, we need you to go in the office and lock the door and just stay there until this is over. And this is my white coworkers.
Wow.
And this is, you know, my manager telling me this because they were cognizant of the fact that this cop will show up and see me being the only black male at this job, that the cops would show up and immediately assume I was the threat. My white coworkers were the ones that were like, hey, go in the office because the cops are coming and we don't want them to think it's you.
Yeah. Right.
And so that spoke to me. I'm like, y'all even know what this is.
Right.
What is that y'all know it?
Yeah.
Because what it is this right here. It's the narrative of that has been portrayed that black males are dangerous. You know, at the end of the day, it's like, yo, everybody has been taught that young black males are dangerous, you know, and that's across the board. That's taught to young black males, to other young black males. Yeah, yeah, young black males are dangerous. But it's like this, on the average, you know what I mean, being young, being black, I've never felt dangerous. I've never been in a dangerous situation or anything like that, unless being put there. And then it's also still, it's like, you got crazy people across the board, right. You know? And it's like, so what you have to realize is this right here, but it's so perpetrated in the media. And then it's like, yeah, I mean, me being a heavy hip hop head, you're gonna see that. But then I think this right here, I say, okay, but are muscle bound white dudes dangerous? Because every time I see an action movie, Sylvester Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger are blowing things up with guns and machines. Uh-huh. But are they inherently dangerous? Yeah.
Well, I don't think the profile of the math nerd in the back of your class in the trench coat is being perpetuated as much. Because when we're talking about what we're seeing as far as mass shooting, if you saw a brother coming down the street in a hoodie, what type of stereotype or what is going to be associated with that?
Right.
And then what we're seeing with the people that are considered mass shooters, what some people are considering terrorism, and that no white male will ever be labeled a terrorist for some of the acts that are being carried out. Mm-hmm. We just try to point out the discrepancy.
No, I mean, you're right. You take a look at the pictures of the people who have been either convicted or accused or taken from the scene. They do not look scary.
No.
Yeah. And to your point, Bishop, I'll say this. I snuck into a lot of pools, too.
Exactly.
And here's the deal. I never got caught.
Right on.
Exactly.
I never got, because I was one of the guys who was in the pool. And right. Why would you even walk up to me? Nobody would walk up to me and assume that I snuck in. A, because I'm good.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I got in and nobody saw me.
Right on.
But B, because I'm white. And it was a white pool. And that's the deal.
And you were,
I never got caught. Never.
And you were swimming, Frank. Did that offend anyone?
Yeah,
I mean, it does.
That's a fact. I think that's what got me.
Does swimming offend you? Like,
well, most white people can't swim.
Well, I'll tell you what. My body didn't bother anybody. I didn't scare a soul. I'll tell you that right now. Though I do fit the profile of most mass killers, strangely enough. These days, Silent Sam, got to get you to talk about Silent Sam. I know it's not Swing Low, but here we go.
Yeah, well, I'm a Carolina alumni. Shouts out to all the Tar Heels out
there.
Sorry to hear that. Yeah, it's okay. It's quite all right. You know, I'll just say a little disappointed. For those of y'all that know that the decision has been made that it's going to go back up. The fashion at which it's going back up in is a little disturbing to me. I understand that Chancellor Folt and, Margaret Spellin's hands were tied in a sense. They said that it's state law written in by Governor Corey that the statue has to go back up. And if you want to take it down, you have to meet this committee on monuments, which to me is like going to the KKK to talk to the KKK about doing KKK stuff.
Right.
Like I'm going, it's a committee that you know you're not gonna win when you speak to.
Right.
So I understand that regard that their hands are tied about it. But to decide this board or whoever has decided that they're gonna put this back up and build a $5 million historical facility.
That is called a come up.
and for those that aren't familiar, Morrison, Hinton, James, E House, Craig, Odom, that part of town is South Campus. I'm just going to be real. That's where all the black kids stay, Frank. That's freshmen. That's just where a lot of the, you know, minority kids stay is on South Campus. And to say, I'm not only am I going to put it back up, but I'm going to build a $5 million building for it.
Yep.
In South Campus.
And I just want to say, technically, it has not been finally decided. Okay. The Board of Governors still has to decide for the whole system. The Board of Trustees of the university made the suggestion. That's where we are. All right, sure. I got about 30 seconds for this. Okay. Word of the year. This is where we get happy. Drip.
Drip.
Tell me about drip in
30
seconds.
What's up with the drip?
I
can tell you. Your drip is your style.
It's your style.
It's
your swag.
Cardi B had a song this year, Drip. Tory Lanez, Drip, Drip, Drip. Lil Gunna and Baby, Drip Too Hard. It just goes on. It's popular culture, man.
It's the Pokemon evolution of swag. That's what it is. It's like
swag,
you got swag.
Because you're like dripping and bling.
Yeah,
right?
That's exactly. Your jewels. That's where it started, and now it's evolved into just your overall
your drip.
Style.
Yep.
So, you know.
There it is.
I have been instructed, edified, and as always, refreshed.
Yes, sir.
By having you on the show. Kevin Causey-Thomas, Kareem Bishop Omega, Jarrett, the host of Intelligently Ratchet, live on Facebook Wednesdays at 9 o'clock. We're streaming live now on the State of Things. So great to have you on the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks, man.
You can see Bishop Omega and the True School Carolina Comedy Tour, which was going to be at the Durham Armory, by the way, January 25th. And we've got all that at our website, stateofthings.org. Yeah. Just ahead, feminist artists of the 60s and 70s helped shape how women think about their bodies and their own power. Stay tuned.